Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I mean, no one plans to get sick, and yet, here we are. My name is Matthew Zachary. I survived cancer, a stroke, and COVID-19, and somehow, I'm still here. I also survived our stupid broken healthcare system, and I want to help you survive it too. So let's go make healthcare suck less together. Because you know what? We're all out of patience. Hey, that's the name of the show. Alrighty, friends, welcome back to the show. Before we get started, if you haven't already, have a listen to The Cancer Mavericks, our groundbreaking new 8-part history series about the origins of cancer advocacy. Stories about the people rather than the disease. So search for The Cancer Mavericks wherever you listen to your podcasts. On the show today, I'm so thrilled to welcome again live here in studio, Allison Silverman, the CEO at Stupid Cancer, my old job, for real, and Shannon Wyant, fellow young adult cancer survivor and sitting member of the Stupid Cancer Board of Directors, also my old job. The best conversations are those without an agenda that just kind of manifest from the chemistry you get by actually seeing people live and in person. Eye contact matters. So prepare your Wayback Machine and your Magic 8-Ball for a Wikipedia throwback into how the sausage was and continues to be made. This is all for the largest young adult cancer support community in the world. You know what it is, Stupid Cancer all day, every day. This one is dedicated to Annie Goodman, Jason Malott, Chad Whitman, Ali Powers, Emily Morrison, Erica Paul, and Lauren Scott. We miss you. We love you forever. Now let's get started. How do we start this? We're here in person?
I know.
What is this like?
Social anxiety. Exactly.
You're here. I see you physically and wow. What's that like?
So I spent 2 months in Florida. So this is pretty normal being close to people.
Well, Florida was like, what's COVID, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. No, exactly. While I was there, most of the places that you would go to, like the grocery stores and certain businesses, would be really strict about the mask. But then you would have this contradiction where you're walking to the beach, where you have all the space between you and everyone else. And on the side of the road, there's a mass group of people who are convinced that a certain president that we recently did not reelect will become president again next month.
Cool.
And rally for that.
That's right. Of this taping, that's right. We're taping in mid-July. He was going to be suddenly president again by August.
Yes. And if not, I think the plan is 2024 and then 2028 for Ivanka.
Okay.
So much to look forward to.
Yeah. So
I can see the direction this conversation is going.
In person with New Yorkers.
Well, all right. Good. So listeners, just before the show, we were discussing like who has the best immune system. So I had cancer twice. I had a stroke and I had COVID. So I don't know. Shannon, you had cancer
once.
And
thankfully.
COVID,
yeah. After being vaccinated.
Right. But Allison, are you scot-free?
I can't top that.
I mean, you got weird genes and your family stuff going on, you're clean right now, knock wood, right?
I've just got like the weird Ashkenazi Jew stuff happening. But no, we are. Yeah.
Dear Tay-Sachs
Sorry,
disease.
Guys.
Yeah, exactly. What's crazy to me is that I was in Mexico when this was exploding while I'm in Mexico, I'm getting messages from my work saying that they're talking about working from home. You know, our research team, I work for a finance firm, was, you know, on top of things and wanted us to be ahead of the game. And that freaked me out. And when I got home, the person I had gone to Mexico with, we came home early because he was getting a fever. And we thought it was sun exposure because we'd been out in the sun quite a bit. But something in my gut was like, we have to go home now. And the next day he was diagnosed with COVID. So I'm confused. I went and got, you know, I couldn't get tested at the time, but I got tested eventually for the antibodies. Didn't have COVID.
Well, I had COVID before it was trendy. I had it in February of 2020.
Well, not, I mean.
Yes. Like before we even knew what it was.
You are a trendsetter. Huh?
I you know,
you,
hey,
you are an influencer.
I gotta do some stuff, right? I had like, I was sick in bed, like, you know, where you're so sick where like you feel gravity, like yes. The earth is pulling you yes. into the floor through your mattress. And I, you know, I didn't have any respiratory stuff looking back. I just was like, had 102 fever and I couldn't move. And months and months later, I mean, I've shared this story. We took the kids to the pediatrician because they were testing kids and they did the PCR and the blood on all four of us because mom and dad were there.
Right.
And they all came back negative with no antibodies. And I came back negative with antibodies. I'm like, how the hell is that? Yeah. So thank you, everyone. And you're welcome.
That's it. You definitely win.
Yeah. I win the how the hell am I alive-ometer.
Yes, yes, you do.
And there's a lot of other people on that scale too.
It's funny how you say that we know what it feels like to lay down and feel like the earth is pulling you down. I actually think when I nod my head, that's a very like cancer survivor experience at some point.
And you know, nodding your head on the radio is the right way to do it.
Again, yes. We're stuck in Zoom. Nobody can see us.
Exactly.
Right. That, I mean, it's quite flavorful to come live in person on the radio. You know, I'm old. I say radio, podcasting, whatever, where, yeah, people can't see us. We're not taking pictures and videos. Like, you know, if you don't like it, change the channel. But this is who we are. I'm perfectly okay with that. I kind of like it. I'm so sick of Zoom.
Oh, my God. So yes, sick of Zoom.
Yes. I mean, I'm a gregarious person who wants to see people. And I definitely overdid it. Like at the very beginning of COVID, I set up twice weekly happy hour Zooms with my girlfriends, a lot of whom are single and were going through difficult times before this happened. And we were on there on time with our wine for 2 and 3 hours at a time. And then slowly as their work became, you know, like everyone else's on Zoom, we slowly drifted down to one. And then finally it would get to the point where I would get online and only one other person would be there. And it became a joke that we would just do it so that we weren't drinking alone. So like you could text somebody and say, I know we're not happy houring tonight, but I want to have a glass of wine. I don't want to do it alone. But now I'm worn out. It's totally worn out.
I was reading an article. In fact, we discussed this on the Vaxxon episode, I think last week, how a lot of people, because of COVID, are finally having like their gestalt moment. Like these are people who were lucky enough to never had trauma in their life. And this is traumatic to an extent in the spectrum of trauma, right? And they're reevaluating their lives. Do I really want to work here? People are looking for different jobs. They don't want to be unemployed. They're desperately trying to like switch their jobs and find purpose. How do you feel about it? I mean, as cancer people, like, fine, I'm glad you found your special purpose. I'm sorry it took a global pandemic. But, you know, we're not comparing. I nearly died. Maybe you kind of maybe almost thought about possibly dying, not to downplay it, but thoughts, ideas.
No, I get it. There's something about why is it, I mean, I'm thinking from the perspective of a new employer looking at someone having gaps potentially in their employment, which is a big issue for young adults in particular facing cancer, and trying to explain that, like, why did you go to school and not start working? Or you started a job and you left it for a long time, and understanding that saying that you had cancer is a totally legitimate reason to have a gap in your employment. It seems like it's more legitimate to say it was COVID. And then that's the end of the story. My sense is that people aren't going to ask you, knowing about HIPAA, they're not going to ask you about COVID. But I know so many young people who have had to go to organizations like, you know, Cancer and Careers, or stumble through. And you just did a whole podcast about this, about people who, the whole movement of trying to get people to understand that you can't fire somebody or not hire somebody because they had cancer. COVID is...
Wait, you listen to my show?
Can you imagine?
Thank you, listener.
There's a little plug.
My listener, listeners.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting history of people taking care of themselves, right? That's what this is all about.
Yeah, the stigma of cancer definitely seems to be more egregious than COVID. Almost like there's a badge of honor that, you know, I took this moment in life to move to the Hudson Valley and get a farm.
Said me never.
As opposed to like, I sat in a hospital room for 18 months and almost died from cancer, but I'm not going to tell anybody about that.
I mean, in doing the documentary and doing the Cancer Mavericks documentary, it's been so revealing to learn about what it really was like in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But this idea of cancer being contagious, right? Like that was the big deal. People thought I was magnetic and could pick things up. But today it's more like we're past that. I think most people understand cancer is not contagious, but it's still like, are you okay? What can I do? And another conversation that I know we talked about, that was, there was a cancer con, was how do you just deal with other people not understanding how to talk to you?
Yeah, I actually have a lot of coworkers who come directly to me when they have a loved one or a friend or a family member that's diagnosed. And their first words are, what do I do? How do I show up? How can I talk to them about it? When do I become overbearing? And I mean, they know me well enough because I'm very open about my 25 years cancer-free, but also trying to navigate that. I think I've made this joke with stupid cancer stories that I felt like I was what not to do when you get cancer, including if someone talked to me in a way that was inappropriate or didn't understand, that I wouldn't necessarily be tactful or gracious or compassionate. But it's a tough topic.
But what is it about cancer that makes you lose your humanity? Or as the person that's trying to help. I mean, you know, if somebody gets the flu, you're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Let me bring you some chicken soup. Right. If somebody gets cancer, you're like, ah, they disappear. I don't know what to do with you.
Yeah.
Yo, I got the chemo in my truck.
Exactly. Seriously. Well, it's funny that you say, I mean, and again, this is, you know, on the last show about people thinking that cancer was contagious, because I heard about that study when I was diagnosed in 1995, because I had Hodgkin's lymphoma. It was a blood cancer. To this day, cannot give blood or donate organs to save someone else's life, because there's still apparently a question mark. Maybe that question mark is dated and not real, but the stigma of cancer equaling death in any way, shape, or form, I think it's our relationship to death that actually keeps people from being able to have the conversation with people when they're in the thick of the illness itself. Even if there's a really good chance that they're going to be fine, or even if we don't know, and they end up, whatever the outcome is, it's the relationship to death, I think, that stops people from showing up.
Back with our guest after the break.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So I want to talk about this idea. The jargon and the acronyms are like, I just make fun of jargon and acronyms all the time. Precision medicine, immunotherapy, you know, targeted medicine. So like this idea that your DNA now defines your outcome and not your geography of your cancer. Is it easier than ever to not die from cancer? Is it fair to say that? Take the young adult misdiagnosis route out for a second. Mm-hmm. Right? There are so many diagnostics and precision stage 3, phase 3, immunotherapy. Like, where if you don't get standard of care and you get this thing, you're probably going to be fine. More than ever, like going back to Mavericks, you kind of just died. Shannon and I got lucky in the 90s, Clinton cancer, right? We got lucky in the 90s. But today, people that get sick are likelier to be able to access something that's targeted to their genes and likely not die way less.
You know, I think it's easier to identify it because of all of the biomarkers and precision medicine and blah, 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 all those words. But I don't know that that has changed, especially for AYAs, how it's treated. And I think so much of AYAs is not just the cancer, but it's all the other shit around it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, I think so much of the support and your mindset has a big role in how you face your treatment, how you get through your treatment, how you face your survivorship. It's just, it's all so interconnected. And it's an interesting point. But I also think it now, it makes us look at cancer. I mean, we know that cancer is not one disease, right? It's thousands of different diseases. But it makes it, it breaks it down to such a minute scale that we now are looking at all of these different diseases and trying to attack all of these different diseases under the same umbrella of cancer. And it's not. It's thousands of different things.
Right.
Like the days of cancer geography, like I said before, are over. So help me unpack this then. So like we know that most people that get sick are like over 65 years old. They're on, you know, Medicare or Medicaid Part D, whatever it is. And they're likely to go to a comprehensive cancer center, ideally, if they're not in the center. Or these oral parodies let you get your treatments in the middle of nowhere. But AYA, are we still just as fucked as we used to be? Or have you noticed any, I mean, I have my opinions, but where are you on the, have we made progress in AYA?
I mean, I think yes. And I'm going to bring up my Canadian self. I think the progress is there.
Progress.
My experience volunteering with and serving on the board of Stupid Cancer, hosting digital meetups and hearing stories firsthand, I just feel like there's a lot of shit in the way. I mean, I'll speak for myself. If I was younger and got cancer right now, I have a tough time Googling a restaurant that I want to go to. And I know that sounds ridiculous. And I'm sure there's people my age in this day and age who definitely know how to do that better than I do. But I was just saying this to someone else about, you know, mental health and how do you find a therapist and how do you find a psychiatrist? It's worse than trying to find a partner on Tinder. Like, I just don't think that there's enough public information that's accessible, particularly AYAs, if that's not where their focus is. And that isn't where their focus should be, right? They should be focused on whatever it is they're doing, school, traveling the world, minus COVID, you know, starting a career, starting a business. And yet, I don't know how to answer that question. I think it's sort of yes and no. And it's about community. Again, like if you can find a community, well you're not going to look for the community before you get sick, right?
Right. No one says, I can't wait to go on Keytruda.
Right, exactly.
One day I will be on Keytruda.
Exactly.
Life goals.
You know, one of my personal agendas before I leave the planet is to create some kind of, and Allison, I haven't talked about this yet, and I might have mentioned it a little bit to you, that I would love to see more stories and even more mainstream documentaries of young adults who have been diagnosed with cancer, not so much just to bring it about as awareness in terms of like how the medical industry has to put its attention on it, but for your fellow classmates to know that it exists. For when you are in school and you feel a lump, you don't think, I'm 19, I'm just going to finish this semester and then figure it out later. There's still a lot of young people who aren't getting the normal annual tests that we should be getting to begin with because we're more focused on, especially at that age or those ages, like we're worried about STDs, not about cancer. And so many stories come out of accidents, you know?
Well, my brother-in-law was diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma because he fell on a skateboard at 15 years old. They would have never known he had that unless he went to the orthopedist.
My brother also had Ewing sarcoma and was diagnosed at stage 4 because he saw everybody else because they thought, what? 24-year-old gets cancer, even though Ewing sarcoma is a pediatric cancer. But, you know, he was like, ow, my leg hurts. And they were like, oh, well, maybe you pulled a muscle. But, you know, I think the science shows us that you're fucked.
Right.
I think there's so much more organizations and people like Stupid Cancer and like you guys who are talking about it. And like, yeah, you're not planning. Nobody plans to get cancer. But, and I hate that term raising awareness because it feels so empty. But
yeah.
But, you know, we know that 70% of employees are in the AYA age range, or Gen Z or millennials.
Right.
So this is something that we should all care about, even if you don't care about cancer.
I think I agree with that. And also, you know, to go and to use a term that Matt's used and a term that we just recently used at Digital Cancer Con is this AYA alum category. And there's a lot of those AYA alums who are not just looking for community, but also use their voice pretty more of us are being more vulnerable, I think, as we realize, especially I think COVID probably helped with this, that we don't want to necessarily just show shiny, happy people on Instagram and other social media contents. Is that the right word? Yeah.
You heard it here. Words.
I'm making up words. No, seriously, like I'm thinking about, you know, I hashtag stupid cancer into my running photos that have nothing to do with fundraising or anything like that, so that there is an opportunity to create the knowledge that it exists in the world and that, you know, if something's going on with you, you should check it out.
Do you remember when I self-servingly invented the AYA Alumni Society in 2014 when I turned 40?
I didn't meet you until like 2016.
Oh,
I think.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
all
right. Yeah.
Well,
2014 is the year that I finally got involved in the AYA space, but I didn't know about you yet.
Yeah. Kenny and Allie Ward and I just decided because I'm turning 40, then everyone else mattered. Like Allie. So Allie and I were like joking, like, all right, I'm going to grandfather you in because she was out many, many years before I was. And at OMG in Vegas at the time, which was the name before CancerCon. I just invented the Stupid Cancer Alumni Society and said, you're all welcome to the club if you're older than me. It was really, really funny. But you're absolutely right. Like, what can we do as alum?
Yeah.
And are we still relevant to the 21-year-old that gets sick in 2021 versus us being like geezers to them when we had cords and no internet during Clinton cancer?
Yeah, I really hope so. I mean, I've said this to Allison, I've said this to you. There's so many times that I've gone to CancerCon and felt like, oh, I'm just here to volunteer and create space and be of service, and realized every time that I took away something that is continuing to support me as a survivor. I mean, you convinced me very last minute to come to CancerCon when I was caring for a partner who was ill. And it was the first time ever that we had a breakout session of what it does it mean to be a young adult who has or had cancer, who turned into a caregiver. That was life-changing for me. And I just had a DM you right after CancerCon, where someone on the DMU mentioned that there was a breakout session with young men. He's starting to feel like that we're using this word aging out, and we're trying to say that you can't age out. Scientifically, maybe you age out, but not out of this club, mm-hmm. as you put it. And he brought up the name Scott Slater, which Matt knows well, and said that when he was younger and first got involved with stupid cancer, that Scott had been a mentor to him. But he himself, this year, this gentleman, I'm going to say his name, Stephen Heaviside, because he's becoming a great...
Shout out to Stephen.
Total shout out to Stephen. Amazing advocate. I think almost unintentionally, he's just really gifted at it. Took a bunch of people, you know, when he looked around the Zoom room and everybody was, you know, 18, and here he is. I don't know what he is. I don't know what you are, Stephen. Sorry, maybe you're in your 30s. I mean, looks like he's 20 still
to
me.
But you look great.
You look amazing, friend. Just immediately thought of Scott Slater and... you know, kind of honed his energy and used it and felt really good about where he is. Like it encouraged him. I think a lot of us talk about making our survivorship worthwhile, because we can get onto the next topic if that's even around the corner, is like survivor's guilt, right? Which is a part of what that AYA alum group is often dealing with.
I'm one of the oldest medulloblastoma survivors in the country.
Say that again. Slowly the stone.
Medulloblastoma. That was the name of my tumor. Again, fucking syllables, right? That was what I had when I was 21. But that's a pediatric cancer. Normally kids that get it are like under 8.
Right.
And I'm 47 now, happily 47. But I still get connected to parents who have newly diagnosed kids that look to me to say, I hope my child grows up to be like you, not like Matthew Zachary, but like a guy who had cancer 25 years ago.
Right.
All right. Question for Allison. Help me unpack how AYA cancer is different, more like sociologically, in Gen Zers than it was in like Gen X and millennials. What's new in the universe of the interwebs?
Oh boy.
And social wokeness and mental health. There's so much stuff that even I'm trying to figure out how to say it the right way. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing in the landscape of the next generation of AYAs?
As with any kind of shift from one generation to the next, it's the way that they communicate and the way that we need to create space for them to communicate and receive their information. You know, us old folks, we were just talking before, we like to talk on the phone and you know, maybe not see people all the time and have like our phones connected to the wall and walk around the kitchen. And the kids these days, they're on social media. We know that people are getting information from social media. And so I think it's kind of go back to our previous conversation, it's our charge to make sure that the information that's front and center is the good information and not the garbage that's out there. But I think there's also this feeling that in the Gen Z community that they're kind of in this lost space, right? Millennials are a huge part of the population and the population in general, not just the AYA population, but the Gen Zers they're younger, they're a smaller population, and they're in that stage in your development where everything is just, you're just like, what the fuck? Like, I'm a teenager and I'm figuring it out and I don't know how to figure it out. And now I have cancer. And so I think, you know, it's very much a different way of absorbing information and understanding. And so I think that's, you know, something that we all need to be cognizant of, that other folks in the community need to be cognizant of. And, you know, as that kind of progresses into the, you know, whoever comes, I don't know what generation is after Gen Z, does it start over?
Right. Gen A. Let's just make that up. Okay. We're going back to A. Or double A, like double in the theater, it goes to double A.
When they age into that, you know, adolescent space, then it's going to be a whole other conversation, and the Gen Zers will shepherd them into it. But yeah, I think it's really about how information is absorbed and shared.
I mean, I'm just curious about the in-person nature of how Gen Zers really did like to physically see each other, because that's how we lived our lives in middle school, high school, and college. We could only be with each other or talk on the phone on a cord, like to one person at a time, right? Like, dear call waiting. Remember life before call waiting and caller ID? Caller ID was interesting because, like, then you knew who was calling. Otherwise, like, fuck, it's this guy. You're like, you have no choice but to pick up the phone. Or busy
pranks.
Signals. I miss busy. Anyway, I'm digressing. But, like, I think what Stupid Cancer was able to accomplish in the early days was it was a very Gen X brand, And we loved the meetup idea came out of like, we just want to physically see each other. The hospital support groups are total shit. I want to just physically see other people. But now, the pandemic notwithstanding, I have friends who have teenage kids that text each other from the next room. Mm-hmm. Like, is there a real desire to physically see each other and talk? Have we lost the capacity to talk to each other in these generations? And would the prospect of a CancerCon in real life, ideally, obviously hybrid is going to make total sense. I'm seeing that working really well across the board economically. But is there a desire of the next generation to actually still want to physically be in person, or do they just want to be virtual on their phones?
I think if we've learned anything from COVID, and hopefully we've learned something, is that, yes, we could do all of this stuff over our computers, and sometimes it's more efficient, sometimes it's easier, but there will always be that desire to see people face to face. Like, that you cannot replace that. Conversation is more efficient, it's more engaging, it's more supportive. And I think especially when you're thinking about dealing with a trauma like cancer as a young person, there really is no better way of finding that support. I don't think it's going to be like, you know, like the 90s when people actually got together in large groups and, you know, that was the only way. And, you know, back when you made a plan with somebody and you stuck with it and you weren't late, because if you were late, they thought you were dead.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But, you know,
that's so true.
Being in real life is always going to be a thing.
I think the parody in my head, of course, is like, fine, CancerCon's in real life. There's a hotel room where there's a mini conference call, like Sage Bolte is in there with like 21 cancer patients and they're all texting each other.
Yes.
There's no voice. They're just all texting each other back and forth. You can't see this on the radio, but I'm frantically attempting to text really fast. Sorry, I'm not really intentionally making fun of Gen Zers. I'm
being the ignorant Gen Xer. Them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Help us understand you. Help exactly. me help us. You.
Right? Exactly. I mean, I've heard a lot of feedback already that the Digital Cancer Con has been super profound in the fact that there are so many people who came from hospital beds, which was a huge thing. But at the same time, there is a very vocal desire to be in person with one another. The whole idea of just hugging each other, especially after, you know, sitting on a screen with 20 people and someone's going through a really, really tough time and all you want to do is, you know, give them a hug, assuming that their immune system will allow for that. Unfortunately, that's part of that story. But Both have to happen. But I think you're right. I think there might be a lot of texting. Although the app, having the app idea, which we've done in the past with Cancer Guys, having that app where people can sort of have their mini
that
conference.
That app was a great idea. Props to Ellie Ward for inventing the CancerCon app. That was fantastic.
It was like Facebook just for the event. Yeah. And it was a fantastic way to for those folks who want to talk on text.
All right. Final word, Allison. What's new with Stupid Cancer? What can people learn and do that's fantastic and exciting that may or may not have to do with teasing CancerCon in real life next year?
Well, so like I said, we did learn a lot from COVID. A lot of our all of our programs went digital last year, still digital this year, and I think we'll continue to do that. We learned that, and we saw that there are people who didn't have access to support in a way that was meaningful to them, and so we hope to continue to be able to do that in ways that really do help them. But like Shannon said, we all need a hug and we need to see each other's faces and be in each other's presence. And so we are going to be coming back together in person. We will have an in-person CancerCon next year. Details to be announced shortly, but it will be next summer. So start making your plans. But it's really about making sure that everybody in the community, caregivers, patients, survivors, professionals are all at the table having the conversation, whether it's over Zoom or whether it's in person, but we're all there, you know, supporting one another and kind of seeing a way through this.
Shannon Wyatt, 25 years?
25 years.
Clinton Cancer.
Yes.
It's our silver cancerversary, you and me. It's our silver cancerversary.
It is. It is. It's funny. I mean, usually, you know, Matt knows this, that we get the congratulations, like somehow we're the heroes that are still alive, that we have had control over this.
Congratulations so on not being dead.
How brave you have been for the last 25 years. But I just had it reflected back to me during a psychiatric evaluation, like real validation that what I went through, especially when I went through it, was I didn't even have to tell her how isolating it was. Like her immediate response was like, oh my God. Not only is getting cancer, a cancer diagnosis, traumatic, but to literally have no information, no Google, no WebMD to scare the daylights out of you, I'm human. I mean, the first time I ever even met a person in person near my age that had cancer was actually when I was about to start treatment. And it was just a very rare experience. Just tell this shortly, that this young man, very, very coincidentally, I did not know had cancer because we were in high school together when he was in remission. And I was there making a decision about how my treatment would go forward. And they said, we have this young person here getting treatment. And of course, it was your classic scenario that I was in the geriatric ward and, you know, there was a pediatric ward and he was getting treated in the geriatric ward because we were the same age at the time. And when he came through the door, I just about fell on the floor because it didn't seem possible. I mean, the whole way I survived that was in denial about the whole thing. And then to meet him face to face. And then I did not meet another young person with cancer again until 2007.
Wow.
1995 to 2007.
I'm thrilled you joined the board, by the way. I mean, that was a while ago, but congratulations on joining the board of directors.
Thank you.
It's just the best use of your purpose.
Thank you. Yes. No, it's an honor beyond words. I'm very excited to be a part of it and to make sure that there's always a place for someone to go when they're diagnosed as a young adult.
Okay. Shannon Wyatt, board of directors member of Stupid Cancer. Allison Silberman, CEO of Stupid Cancer. My old job. You're doing great. I'm so proud. I'm just so proud. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
StupidCancer.org, all day, every day, you know what it is. See you later, folks.
That's all for today, folks. If you like today's show, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social, and tell all your friends to listen. Out of Patience with Matthew Zachary is a product of Offscript Media. Our executive producer is Matthew Zachary. Our senior producers are Brianna Seely, Jen Oranger, and Andrew McDowell. It is mixed and edited by Brianna Seely. Our theme music is by the Mike Van Allen Quintet and by Mara. For advertising and media inquiries, email media@offscript.com. Hit us up at contact@offscript.com to share comments, feedback, and make recommendations. For more information, visit offscript.com.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on Auto Trader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on Auto Trader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.